Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Freedom!
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth, and we're living well tonight with Thomas Bombazuto.
Good evening, Drew.
How's Thomas?
I'm doing well. I'm doing
what are we doing tonight?
We have an open show tonight.
We have an open show. That's good, because I wasn't ready to interview anyone.
That's right. So, no, we didn't read any books this week.
We didn't read any books. We're not going to interview anyone, you know. So we're just doing an open show. So our guests are our listeners.
That's right.
Any of our listeners, all five of them out there that want to call in and ask a question. And if they all call in, we should be able to fill the show up.
That's right. Well, they already got home. They're afraid of the snow that's coming, so they're all sitting.
Is there snow coming? Don't tell me that.
Well, there's a rumor about that.
Yeah. So. Preferably that we just think of sunshine, Thomas.
That's right.
You know? And spring is around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't that stupid groundhog see a shadow or whatever it is? Which is it that's good?
I think if he sees a shadow, it's six more weeks, right? So that's not good.
Now, what did he do?
I didn't pay attention to Punxsutawney Phil.
Somebody told me something. I think Chris told me what happened. Anyway, so we're on an open show. So if you want to call and ask a question, 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680. While our listeners think about calling in, and now's the best time to do it, why don't we do a Drew's View? And what I wanted to talk about, Tom, is one of my favorite topics, taxes.
Oh, yeah. It's the time.
I love to help people pay less taxes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just get giddy about helping people pay less taxes, because I think the tax laws are completely capricious.
Mm.
They're arbitrary. They're political. What's the word we're looking for? They're politicized?
Politicized.
There you go. Politicized. They're just ridiculous. The tax laws are totally unfair. They're totally arbitrary. The government, no matter how much they tax, mm-hmm. they can't figure out how to live on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole system is totally broken down. Adam Smith said many years ago that tax laws should be transparent.
Mm-hmm.
They should pay for a limited government. They should be fair, and they should be easy to pay. And none of that applies
mm-hmm.
anymore.
Mm-hmm.
None
mm-hmm.
of it applies in any way, shape, or form. And I just love to help people pay less taxes. I mean, there's no reason to ever do anything illegal or anything even can be construed as illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many things you can do. The laws are so complicated now. There's so many things you can do
mm-hmm.
if you just study the laws and understand the different things. Now, I will admit that President Obama, you know, he obviously goes around to a lot of these tax seminars
yes.
that we go to, because he, in his last budget, went after almost every single little tax planning strategy that you could even think of
right.
in the tax community.
Yep.
So, anyway, that's another story in and of itself. But there are so many things you can do if you just understand the law. But let's go to Kevin
mm-hmm.
in Baltimore County. Kevin, how can we help you?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I can fix all the tax codes real quick. How much you made times 0.15 or whatever equals, and that's your tax. End of story. But
you can't do that, Kevin. That's not fair, they say. That's not progressive and so forth.
Well, it doesn't allow the stealers, and I call these politicians stealers, steal the money. And these programs that they come up with, I know how government works, and they're all stealing programs. They're not done for the betterment of the people, but they're done to help cronies, buddies who pay for their campaigns, and that cycle goes on, and these politicians
right.
are in office forever.
Yeah. Preaching to the choir, Kevin, but you got to ask your question now. Go ahead.
Real quick, money in the bank, and of course you get no interest on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have like $58,000, and last year I made $100.
Here's what
that.
You do, Kevin. Here's what you do. Go look for a good internet bank, a good internet money market, and you'll get about 1% on your money.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
Now, you know, if that's all the money you have, you can't be taking too much chance with it. But if that's not, if that's just your emergency money, that's about as good as you're going to get, about 1%.
That's it.
Yeah, but yeah. Now, you know, can you take chance with it? Can you take risk to lose it and so forth?
No, not, I mean, can't lose it, but well, then, you watch the stock market going up like a rocket.
Yeah, well, if it goes down like a rocket, you're going to lose it, you know, so.
Or putting money into stocks because there's no other place to make money. So,
well, that's what the government's doing. They're manipulating the market.
And that's
They're
right.
forcing everybody into the equity markets by pushing down rates, and so we have very low rates.
So you have to decide, am I willing to take the risk? If you are, then the stock market's a good place to consider. But if you're not, the only thing you're going to be able to get, Kevin, is a online internet bank, money market like Alibank, Capital One 360, Discover, GE Capital. Mm-hmm. They're all paying about 1%. I even had a client write me the other day. He's getting 1.4% for like the first 6 months that his account's open.
If you go to a website, Kevin, called bankrate.com, it'll give you a lot of information on those kinds of things, and you can look it up. But as Drew pointed out, you know, the preservation of principle there. That's probably the best way to go.
Get a run, Kevin. Good point. And thank you for the government dissertation. You're absolutely right. Kevin in Towson, how can we help you?
My question is regarding education savings accounts, covered L, and claiming expenses, qualified education expenses for a child. It's for previous years. In other words, I missed a couple years ago being able to make the distribution. So if I took the distribution now, I'm worried that you get the 1099-Q and it'll look like I'm taking the expenses for this year, when really I want it for...
The education savings accounts have to match expenses that you have in the current year. If you didn't take it out in the past year, you can't go backwards and take it, unfortunately, as far as I know. I don't know of anything that allows you to go backward because when you take money out, you like you say, you get the 1099-Q and you have to match it against corresponding expenses for that year. I don't know how else you can do it.
Okay. Well, does that apply also to the 529s? Let's say you paid tuition on December 31st.
No, there is a provision in that. There is a provision in there that if you paid tuition or expenses for the next year, 2014, in 2017 and 2013, I mean, you could allocate that money to the current year and take it out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but if you're talking 2 years, then there's no way.
All right, it just seems very complicated that you have to...
Now, the other thing you could do if you have more than one child or if you have a niece or a nephew or something like that who's still in college, you know, you could switch the money over to another child or another niece or nephew who's in college and then get the money out tax-free.
Okay.
All right? So there are things you can possibly do, but you do have to make sure that you coordinate your distributions with your expenses.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye. If anybody knows different, because, you know, that kind of thing is there could always be some quirky little thing out there that I'm just not familiar with. Believe it or not, Tom, there could be some quirky little thing out there that I may not be familiar with. Anyway, Frank, if you hold on, we'll be right with you. We're on an open show today, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask your question right now, I'm going to Nick, Rehack, and Traffic.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Noah, I don't like the tax man. But we're going to Frank in Baltimore. Frank, how are you?
Fine, Drew. Suppose a senior wants to start investing in the stock market, but in order to control risk with the market at a high, the game plan is to invest $1,000 a month systematically for maybe up to 10 years, which would be a total principal investment of $120,000.
Right.
And then hopefully at the end of the 10 years, you'd have somewhere around, you know, maybe $200,000. But in any event, you could see exactly how you've done, because if you have more than 120, you had some kind of a gain. If you had less, you lost money, but you controlled your risk by spreading it out over 10 years.
Yeah.
What, if you were going to do that, what single mutual fund would you personally select to do that with?
Well, that's an interesting question, you know, because it really depends on what types of total risk you want to take. And I also would like to modify that a little.
Uh-huh.
Do you, would you say the person already has $120,000, or is this coming out of cash flow?
Cash flow, let's say Social Security, which at this point is kind of discretionary. It's money they can afford to lose. Obviously, if there's a problem 5 years into it and they need the cash, they just stop investing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I think, you know, you could go with a global type fund.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what would you say would be a good global fund? That way you get a mixture of a little bit of everything. You could just go with an index.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
there's a Vanguard.
I was going to say, you probably want to go with somebody where it's not going through like a broker where you're paying a load or anything like that. So you want to go to like a Vanguard or somebody like
Vanguard's
a director, even a T. Rowe.
Total global market, isn't that what it's called?
Total you know, market fund, which includes international and U.S. So that would be a good way to go. You get, you know, diversification there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, there are other ones too. You know, you could, what's it called? The Prime Cap Odyssey is still open, which is a great fund, but that's predominantly U.S., but still it's a great fund and it's done great over long term periods of time.
Is that Vanguard or it's not
that
family
fund? It's separate. It's a different family of funds. The Vanguard actually has a fund with them, but they've closed their fund. But,
right. This is a fund with Prime Cap Odyssey, but it's got a great track record, you know, and so forth. But there's plenty of funds like that in, you know, you'd have to decide whether you just want just want domestic, or whether you want to add that whole international flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I would lean toward, with your strategy you're talking about, I'd probably throw the whole global mix in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What Vanguard index fund would you select if you wanted to go that way?
Which is it called, Tom? You said it was called Total...
Yeah, it's a Total Market Index. I mean, that would be an option. I mean, the other place to consider right here in town is T. Rowe Price. You know, they have no-load funds, you know. And the nice thing about Vanguard is it's a little cheaper, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but T. Rowe's local, and they've got active funds as well. So, but I don't have the actual ticker or the name of the fund in front of me, but... if I get that for you, I'll mention it later in the show.
And there's also, we own one called the Wisdom Tree Global Equity Income.
That's an ETF. You'd have to pay a commission to buy that.
Yeah, that's right.
Know,
he has to buy it every time. He has to pay $5 or $6, $10 every time he buys it.
Mm-hmm.
So he wants an open-end mutual fund. That's right. Yeah.
All
right,
like
Frank.
All righty.
Good point. Thank you. John on the Eastern Shore. John, how can we help you?
Yes, sir. Quick question on dependents. You think this would be a straightforward question, but in a nutshell, I qualify to claim my parents as dependents. Okay, I support them, and I meet all the numbers to do that.
And your parents don't make any income?
That's correct.
Okay, then I'd agree. Go ahead.
And so I support them, you know, monthly and everything, but if you go through the rules and regs, I meet those criteria. But now, last year when I did the taxes that way, I'm wondering, is there a cap on based on my income whether I can claim them or not? Because whether I claim them as dependents, and I use TurboTax, or not, it didn't seem to make any difference to the bottom line.
Let me ask you a question. Is your income somewhere in the 250 to 500 range, thousands?
Yes. Are you talking about gross or after?
Well, let's just say adjusted gross income.
Yes.
Okay, so if you look on line like 45, 46, 47, I can't remember exactly where it is, you're probably paying the alternative minimum tax.
Yes, I am.
Now, that takes away all your exemptions. You look at how the alternative minimum tax is calculated, you lose your exemption, so they don't help you in that regard. Now, you know, you could get some other deductions for them possibly. But I think a lot of them, you know, other deductions would be phased out also with the alternative minimum tax. You'd really want somebody to look at that, John, because there's a lot of things you may be able to do that you're not doing that TurboTax isn't going to walk in and coordinate and think about. So Right here, you know, just off the top of my head, alternative minimum is what's killing you right now.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's why it doesn't help you any yet. But there may be some other things you can do. And, you know, one of the other strategies is if you have income that you can shift to your parents, that's the really cool way to work with it.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? If you have, let's say you have really highly appreciated stocks. So instead of supporting your parents where you're just giving them money, you shift the money, let them sell the stocks. They have a 0% capital gains rate. You lose that money to pay their bills, and voila, you don't take them as a deduction. And man, you could probably shelter somewhere around $50,000 of capital gains a year doing that.
All right, well, that's a good suggestion. I appreciate your time.
But there's a lot more strategies you could do right here on the show. It would be difficult to talk about, right? All right? All right, take care. Good point, though. Mm-hmm. Alternative minimum tax, I hate them. Part of one of the things I think is unfair. Mark in Reisterstown.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my telephone call.
Yeah, not a problem. What's up?
Okay, here's my question. To what extent and to how closely does the IRS look at deductibles? I'm a graphic artist. So to what extent and how closely does the IRS look at deductibles, and or will they look at deductibles in accordance with tax write-offs for, say, book work, paperwork, say I have an accountant who does my paperwork.
Oh, I mean, the point of the matter is, Mark, whether they look at it or not is irrelevant. The question is how much do you have? And whatever you have, you should take it all, regardless if they look at it or not. In other words, the question isn't how will they look at it. The question is, do you have the defense of it, whatever it is? Now, if you're calling me and saying, you know, give me a number that I think I can deduct without worrying about them looking at it, that doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I want to avoid a red flag. That's what I'm saying. In other words,
now, don't worry about a red flag. If you've got the support to the deduction, put up all the red flags you want. Tell them to come on in here, guns blazing. I could care less because I absolutely can prove these deductions. Never, ever should you worry about red flags if you have the valid proof for why you're taking a deduction, and you should never take a deduction unless you have the proof for it.
Right. Oh, exactly. Exactly. No, I was just thinking, you know, hey, they see like a bottle of glue on there, and glue in a lot of my stuff, you know.
Well, don't worry about it, Mark. If you have your receipts and it's $50,000 and you made $60,000, don't worry about it if you have the proof. Don't worry about red flags.
Very good.
Matter of fact,
good.
People who worry about red flags are hurting themselves, and the IRS never worries about people who have valid substantiation to their deductions. Their red flags are only to catch the people who are taking deductions without any proof as to why they're taking the deduction.
Yeah, for people who are trying to cheat the system.
That's the idea, sir. So just take your deductions and keep your proof, okay?
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Bye. Anyway, we've got to see what's happening with traffic again, but I hope Joe and Ben will stay on with us after we hear from Nick Rehack in this pause. Take it away, Nick.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
It was raining hard in Frisco. I needed one more fare to make my
That's,
night.
Wait a minute, don't tell me. I know this. You know it, Tom.
My wife knows it.
No. Yeah, I mean, I know it. I mean, it's so common. It's, what is it, Noah?
Harry Chapin.
Right, you know, anyway. So, right. There you go. So the mutual fund, the Vanguard fund that we were talking about, Tom, that was Total World.
Yeah, so there's a couple different ones. The Total Stock Market Fund is the U.S. fund, and then they've got a Total World Fund, you know. So the VTWSX is their Total World Fund, which is about 55% in the North America.
Yeah, and it's gonna cost like 0.15.
Well, that one's 0.30 because it's a total world.
Yeah,
but it's interesting, you know, somebody like Frank, you know, if you started out with the Admiral shares on the total stock fund, it's only at 5 basis points. Whereas
yeah.
if you go on the investor share, it's at 17. So if he took like a lump sum, 10,000, makes his first initial investment, gets into the Admiral shares, then he can just add, you know, after that, the $1,000 a month, and he's paying 12 basis points less a year, and over that time frame he's looking at, he'll save some money.
Yeah. You know, so anyway, we're on an open show. Our listeners are our guests. If you want to call in and ask a question, 410-922-6680. We're going to Ben in Randallstown.
Hey, Drew, how you doing?
Great, you?
I think last week you had a guy on the radio. What's the name of that book that he had Tim up with?
A Year with Peter Drucker.
A Year with Peter Drucker.
Yeah, yeah. Say it again.
A Year with Peter Drucker. Joseph Massarello.
A Year with Peter
Drucker.
D-R-U-C-K-E-R?
Yep, that's correct.
And where can you get that at?
You can get it on Amazon.com. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. You can get it, Google that online. Mm-hmm. I think there's a place you could buy it.
So all I need to type, I need the guy that wrote it, do I?
No. A year with Peter Drucker. That's what it's called. And it's a great book, really is. If you want to
based on what you were saying, it was great.
Yeah, if you want to be in leadership and learn leadership principles from the master, there's nobody better than Peter Drucker. He taught it. He taught it, you know, from the heart. And
right.
It's 52 weeks of principles that Drucker used to teach. All right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, Drew.
All right, buddy.
Oh, hey, yep. Look. Hello.
Yeah. Go ahead. Real quick.
Give me your telephone number.
410-823-7283.
7283. You said something on the morning show one time. Last week with either Luba or either Sean Casey. You said how you can get rid of a lot of different things in taxes and so forth like that. I wrote it down what you said, but I just can't say it verbatimly what I'm saying up to you now. But I like what you were saying. I think I need to talk with you.
Well, you gotta have a fairly reasonable level of discretionary income. But yeah, there are a lot of little cool things you can do if you know how to work with the tax laws. Like I was just talking to the guy a second ago,
mm-hmm.
and his parents. You shift this money over to his parents, capital gains over his parents, and bam, we take $50,000 of capital gains tax free. Anyway, Ben, I gotta run, but good question.
Okay.
Let me know if you need anything. All right, I'm going to Joe in Westminster. Joe, how can we help you?
Hi, Drew. Drew,
what happened to Tom?
From a friend.
Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
That for the tax year 2014 and for the medical deductions, you can use the premiums that you've paid for the entire year. And that seemed a little off-key to me. I've never heard of that being done.
It's always been the truth, Joe.
Pardon?
It's always been.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Now, keep in mind, though, you still have to, you're over 65 or under 65?
Over.
Okay, so you have to meet 7.5% of adjusted gross income to take your medical deductions. But yes, insurance premiums are absolutely included in that, including Medicare premiums that are deducted from your Social Security pay. So you know how you pay that $1,200 a year to Medicare from your Social Security money?
How do you verify that?
Well, it's on your 1099 SSA.
Okay.
If you look at your 1099 SSA, it says, you know, I made this much,
mm-hmm.
and it was deducted was $1,200 for
mm-hmm.
Medicare,
mm-hmm.
and then your net check was this, and that $1,200 is your substantiation.
Okay.
But you can deduct all kinds of medical insurance premiums, dental premiums, vision premiums. You know, you can deduct them all, my friend. All right?
One more question.
Go ahead, real quick.
I get services from a person who I have to visit weekly, and the title of the individual, the letters after the name are these, MS, NCC, comma, LC.
Those are deductible. Medical deduction.
That's deductible?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, that's what I needed to know. Thank you very much, Drew.
All right, buddy. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Yeah, what he was referring to was counseling services. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, yes, absolutely. Counseling services are absolutely deductible, and he'd have no problem with that. We're going to Earl the Pearl.
Yeah, hi. How you
Monroe.
That's what people call me sometimes. I have a question for you, Drew.
Yeah.
If you have $5,000, even $1,000 or $5,000, and you could buy Apple stock or you could buy Twitter stock, which one would you suggest you should buy?
Well, that always depends, of course. You know, Apple stock would be a relatively, you know, moderate bet because, you know, you got a company that doesn't seem to be stopping anytime soon. Nobody seems to be able to truly chip away at their base. On the other hand, Twitter stock is down a lot, and if they can get their act together, you know, it could do exceptionally well. Look what happened with Apple. Look what happened with Facebook. Look what happened with a lot of these companies that, you know, just didn't seem to be doing anything, and all of a sudden they took off for the moon. So it depends on whether you want to be speculative or not, and, you know, but I don't buy these kind of stocks myself individually because it just doesn't meet into the way I think about stocks individually. You got to have a strategy. My strategy doesn't deal with these types of super growth stocks.
Right. Well, I'll ask you a question. Well, I mean, Apple, that has a market cap of like almost $700 billion,
right.
Yeah, $750 billion.
How much more could it grow? I mean.
Well, it's a good point, but Carl Icahn came out and said he feels that the stock should have if it was fairly valued today, Carl Icahn, who's one of the largest shareholders at Apple, said that if it was fairly valued today, Apple should have a market cap of $1.25 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
That was his statement. Now it's
50%
about
higher.
That's because he owns it.
Well, you know, I said that to my parents, too. I said, Dad, you know, he happens to own it, so maybe he wants a bunch of people to buy it before he sells it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you never
know.
Mm-hmm. You know, again, Earl, it depends on why you want to own the stocks and what your strategy.
Money.
I understand, but you have to have
make money, Drew.
You have to have
money.
You have to have a strategy, Earl.
Right.
When you buy stocks, you have to have a strategy. And what is your strategy? And your strategy can't be that, well, everybody else is buying it, or, gee, it sounds like a good stock, or, boy, it's, you know, you got to have a strategy. And you come up with a strategy and then buy it. And if you don't have a strategy, just stick with mutual funds or ETFs.
Well, but Apple is an exception to other stocks, wouldn't you say so? I mean,
when it was down at 300 or 200, yeah, I would have said it was an exception. You know, when the iPhone came out, I had a lot of clients who saw it and thought, you know, hey, this is a great concept. This is a great idea. But here it is 7 years later. Everybody has an iPhone. Everybody has an iPad. And unless the iWatch, and I personally don't see, you know, maybe, you
we'll
know.
See.
Because people wear watch. I mean, today, Drew, a lot of young people, they don't even wear watches.
No, they wear Fitbits.
Young people today.
But there is a reason. You know, I don't wear a watch anymore either.
Well, you're
but,
a young guy.
Well, I don't know about that. But, you know, I can see the idea. If I had a nice-looking iWatch that when instead of going to reach for my cell phone to pull it out to figure out who's texting me, who's beeping me, or what time is it, et cetera, I could just turn my hand and look at it and say, oh, Joe's texting me or Earl's texting me, asking me about Twitter again.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, and the kids are wearing, you know, if you look at the kids, Earl, the kids are wearing all these Fitbits around our office, and we, you know, not even just the kids anymore, but, you know, and they're getting dangly, and, you know, and they're wearing them as jewelry, and, and so, because it has a purpose, it's doing something other than just telling the time. Once phones came out, they told time, so people didn't need a watch, but now that they've got these other devices, that the watch, you know, the bracelet kind of thing, if it has a function to it, like you said, Drew, if it can do a variety of things, it's going to...
Yeah, I mean, you know, right now, when you get a text message, message, you're constantly reaching for your phone. You're
right.
If I could just turn my arm and look to see who's texting me, I might find that extremely appealing.
Kind of like Dick Tracy.
Anyway, we've got to see what Scott Larimore is saying about the weather, and he better be telling us no snow. Scott, take it away.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, last leg of the show, open show, 410-922-6680. We still have two callers online, so we'll go right to them. Chris in Highlandtown, how can we help you?
All right, well, I'm 73 years old.
All right.
The only income I have is Social Security. Only, let me put it this way, only verifiable income I have is Social Security. I do have some room rentals that amounts to about maybe $8,000 a year.
Okay.
Now, if I claim those, can I? What kind of deductions can I make as far as payment on Social Security? I have no house payment. It's a reverse mortgage. I don't know if that might be a problem with a reverse mortgage. People with me having an income on it either.
Well, if all you have is Social Security and room rentals, and the room rentals only come up to $8,000 a year, you have no filing requirement.
I still don't have any filing requirements. Okay.
Not that I know of. Is it anybody sending you a 1099 on that rental income? Okay, well then.
No.
And you're sure there's no other verifiable income, as you call it?
Okay, so I don't have to, right.
Yeah.
Okay, great. That's all I wanted to know.
All right.
Thank you.
You take care. You know, 73, I can't see how he could possibly have a filing requirement. But, I don't have all the information, but that's as good as I can say.
Yeah.
Bill in Perry Hall, how can we help you?
Yes, I wanted to ask you an easy question about taxes, but before I do, on the previous caller, he might have more of an issue with liability if there's a fire or government regulation. So that's
that's a good point, and if
problem.
He didn't, if he, especially if he's renting out room in his own house and he hasn't told his property casualty insurance agent that he's renting out rooms, he could have a real liability issue. So that's a good point.
And if the renters are upset with him, they could go to the government and say they rented the room for so many years, and they could go back after him. So anyway,
that's government.
That's
yeah, go ahead, Bill.
Question about taxes. This is an easy question for you, and I've always kind of wondered about this. For tax purposes, when you're trying to establish the basis of a stock, is the basis based upon the net of the stock? In other words, the gross price minus the fees for buying and selling it, or is it based upon the actual, which is the net, or based upon the gross price, and you have to absorb the cost of the fees whether you buy it or sell it? What is the
Your cost basis is increased by any fees you pay for the stock. So if you buy a stock at 10, you buy 100 shares at 10, it's $1,000, and they charge you $10 trading cost, and it's $1,010 is your basis.
Okay, now when you sell the price...
You sell it for $2,000, and you sell it for $1,990 minus your $1,010. You have a gain of $980.
Okay, so you add the fee into it as your...
The commissions or trading costs are always added into the buy and out of the sell.
That's what I wasn't sure about. Yeah, it increases the price of the stock and decreases the price of the sell.
Yeah, well, actually, the way that most computer programs do it is you put in your buy price, you put in your sell price, and then it asks for cost of trading, and it adds and subtracts those.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right, and just beginning 2010, the government is now forcing the companies to do that for you.
Yeah, that's true, but don't trust them. Anybody who's sitting out there accepting what the brokers tell the government and assuming that that's correct is costing themselves a fortune. I can assure you that the brokers are wrong more than you can imagine.
But these are statements coming directly from the company. What the basis is?
No, they're not coming from the company. They're coming from the brokers, not the company.
Oh.
Yeah, so if you're at Merrill Lynch and you buy 20 stocks or whatever, You just have to monitor it. You know, usually they're right. If you bought it from them and you sold it from them, but it's when quirky things happen, like you get divorced or somebody mm-hmm. dies or things like that. That's when they get out of whack. Okay?
Okay.
I got to run.
Yep, thanks.
All right. Mm-hmm. Ken in Paul in West Baltimore. Paul, he's gone, isn't he?
How are you doing today?
Oh, there he is. Paul, hurry up. Ask the question.
Right, how you doing? Listen, do you pay taxes on Social Security income?
Yes, if you have a lot of other income, do you?
Yeah, well, no, not really, because they say, my sister was telling me if you don't have enough with Social Security income, you have to pay taxes on it.
That's true. If you have no other income, and you sort of just said, yes, I don't have any other income, and
yeah, that clears that up.
And so, now I should say that if your Social Security is substantial, and actually I can't think of, there is a slight possibility. If you're making a lot of Social Security income.
Yeah, she get 20. She get 21,000 off of Social Security, and she said that...
If that's all you make, it's 21,000 off of Social Security, then there's no way you would have to pay taxes on it, federally or state.
Right.
All right?
Right.
All right.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, take care. That was an easy one, sort mm-hmm. of. You know, it's hard to answer these questions to them. Well, Ken, real quick, how can we help you?
Didn't our King Obama sign paperwork saying that if you got money in the bank and the bank goes belly up, they can seize your assets?
No, I don't know where anybody heard that. If you have money in the bank and you're FDIC insured, you're going to get your money back by FDIC.
Up to that.
Now, they've been having a commercial on the radio saying that he signed paperwork or executive orders or whatever saying if the banks go belly up, they can seize our money.
You know, I'm sure that whoever did that commercial has some kind of gimmick that they're doing,
mm-hmm.
and I would bet they're selling annuities or something, and, you know, and those people are notorious for exaggerated
your assets, you're saying.
As long as they're FDIC insured, Ken. Now, look, if you have $1 million in a bank and you're single and it's $1 million in the bank and that bank goes under, you're going to lose your $750,000 unless the bank has other assets to support it. So you're definitely going to get back what you have FDIC insured. And anybody who says otherwise is trying to lie to you for a manipulative purpose.
All right, I'll have to look that up. I'll call you back if I find out what the order is or whatever you signed. If I find anything else,
I can assure you that somebody is lying mm-hmm. on that, because I follow this stuff pretty closely, and there's nothing I've heard on that
mm-hmm.
regard.
Mm-mm.
All right, buddy?
In a commercial.
Yeah, well, you know, I've heard these commercials, and the annuity ones are the ones that drive me the craziest, because they're blatant manipulation, what they're saying in a lot of those commercials. Anyway, take care, Ken.
But you remember when you seized everybody's gold and gave them pennies on the dollar. You remember that, don't you?
What they did what?
When they seized everybody's gold and gave them pennies
oh,
on the
well,
dollar.
Oh, you're talking about the 1930s.
Well, who says they can't do that now with our money?
I wouldn't worry about it. I hear what he's saying. I wouldn't worry about it right now, you know? Anyway, we're down to the last 30 seconds. What's happening next week, Tom?
Well,
we're having a good show next week.
Yeah.
We have a good show every night, I think.
That's
every
right.
Week.
That's right. Well, there's Sherry Atkinson, this author Stonewalled. Is the,
Stonewalled.
Yeah.
And it's she's talking about how the media, the news media,
right.
basically manipulates the news.
Mm-hmm.
And even when they try to come out and bring the truth,
mm-hmm.
they're not interested in you bringing the truth
mm-hmm.
out anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Not like
mm-hmm.
the days of Woodward and Bernstein and Woodward,
right,
or whatever
right.
it was
Woodward
called.
And Bernstein. That's
Woodward
right.
and Bernstein.
Yeah.
You know, she's saying
yeah.
that those days are gone. They're not interested in the truth anymore.
Yeah. yeah, yeah.
And so
they're putting a muzzle on them.
It should
yeah.
be should be an interesting interview.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. all right.
Anyway, this is Money, Riches, and Wealth. Drew Tignanelli and Tom Bombasuto saying God bless.